Welcome to the Veterans Perspective, presented by the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency, with your host, Director of the MVAA, Adam Ollier.
I'm Adam Ollier, the Director of the Veterans Affairs Agency, and I'm really excited to be joined by Dan Ringo as we talk about another moment for service members, as we talk about the benefits that you've earned, and just telling the life story of somebody who has served this country and served admirably and honorably, and what that means for you. As we kick off Black History Month, I guess we're continuing into Black History Month, it's really exciting and a great opportunity to talk to a Black service member about your experiences and what it means to have served and how this works. You know, we continue to want to highlight the stories of service members and their families, and particularly those like yourself that have been successful in business and gone out and been able to do other things as we look forward into a new year of encouraging people to take advantage of the benefits that they've earned. It's Director Ollier from the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency, and we're going to get right into it. Dan, I'm going to read your bio because everybody loves it when people read their bio.
Absolutely.
They're like, please stop, don't read anymore. I will tell you who I am.
Right.
Dan Ringo is the Senior Vice President of Operations at Walker Miller Energy Services, one of the largest African-American-owned clean energy firms in the United States. A decorated U.S. Air Force veteran, Dan is a proud graduate of Detroit Public Schools Community District and Wayne State University undergrad and law school. He began his professional journey in the skilled trades and has progressed to service in several senior leadership roles, an accomplished author, father, and grandfather. Dan lives in Detroit with his wife. He enjoys chess, cooking, baking, and the sport of boxing. So we're going to have a lot of things to talk about. I mean,
Absolutely.
That's a very diverse set of interests. I mean, when that man says, I'm cooking and baking and boxing, he's like, oh, you better watch out.
Absolutely.
Dinner's coming. Dan, where'd you go to school? You said DPS.
I went to DPS. I moved here when I was 12, and I attended Taft Middle School.
Okay.
And from Taft Middle School, I went to Henry Ford High School and graduated Henry Ford High School in 1991.
Mm-hmm. So you're a Trojan.
I'm a Trojan. I'm a proud Trojan.
Well, you know, I don't know any Trojans that aren't proud of being Trojans. But, for what
Absolutely.
That's worth,
That's worth a lot. For the Trojan nation, we'll take it.
So you went on from Henry Ford. What happened next?
So I didn't go traditionally. People who go into the military out of high school typically go immediately after high
mm-hmm.
school. My plan was a little different, or my travel was a little different. I went 2 years later, and it wasn't my plan. I never planned on going to the military. I became a teenage father
mm-hmm.
right out of high school and worked a lot of odd jobs trying to find my way, and didn't have the best work ethic. And my father, who was a veteran of both the Army and the Air Force,
okay,
had been on me about going into the military, primarily
mm-hmm.
the Air Force, to kind of find that direction and get that
yeah.
footing in life. And just one day, right before I was getting ready to turn 20 years old, I had an incident happen, and I said, you know what, it's time for me to
mm-hmm.
to become serious. And I went to a recruiter, took the ASVAB, and I was gone in 3 weeks.
Oh wow.
So from 3 weeks from me making my mind up.
You must have done well on the ASVAB.
I did really well on the ASVAB. It was funny because the recruiters thought, here's a guy just come in off the street. We don't know who he is, where he comes from. We don't have any, prior background or knowledge.
Nope.
And he takes the ASVAB the next day, he does well, and he qualifies for all these jobs. And it's like they thought I was running from the law. So they was like, why are you trying to leave so fast?
Yeah.
And I'm this type of person. Once I make my mind up,
yeah.
I was ready to go. And so I was gone in 3 weeks. And my original job was actually intelligence operations apprentice.
Okay.
And I had no idea really what that meant it was.
Sounded cool, though.
It sounded, going from flipping burgers at Wendy's to saying I'm going to be an intelligence operations apprentice.
Yeah.
It sounded really good. It played well. But eventually I got into skilled trades because when I do the security background check and basic training, because I had family members who were involved in illegal activity, and I said I knew about it,
mm-hmm.
Not that I was involved in it, because I knew about it, that disqualified me.
Mm.
So then I had to use my ASVAB scores to then find another occupation, and my father said, why don't you take a trade, something that if you decide to get out in 4 years, you'll be able to transferable skill you'll be able to use.
Yeah.
And so that's how I got into HVAC, heating, ventilation, air conditioning,
okay.
refrigeration.
You did that in the Air Force.
I did that in the Air Force. I became a journeyman.
That's interesting. You know, most people, you imagine that they're doing something with aircraft.
Yeah, no. Matter of fact, we supported, so everybody that's outside of flying or actually a pilot, you support the people that fly the planes.
Yep.
So my mission was, I was part of the Prime Beef, which is the Base Emergency Engineering Force, and we would deploy anywhere in the world to pretty much establish a air base. So I was mm-hmm. part of, that was my primary job. My second job was fixing your air conditioning or your boiler on base.
Well, maybe I'll pick your brain, because the heat in my office, as you can tell, doesn't exactly work very well. But I mean, that's a really practical skill.
It was a smart move.
You know, to go from the cool guy intelligence field into the very practical side. Everybody's got heat.
Everybody's heat goes out.
And
you have to be able to be cool in the summertime, and you want to be warm in the wintertime. And it was a very practical skill. It was a very transferable skill. And that served, again, as the foundation for when I transitioned out of the military. But I originally thought I was going to become an officer. I got my mm-hmm. associate's degree of applied science while I was in the Air Force. And I had took the AFOQT, and I was going to do officer training school.
Yep.
But my dad then mentioned about this engineer apprenticeship back home with the Detroit Public Schools that really, within 4 years, paid a lot more money than a second lieutenant.
Oh, yeah.
So I decided to get out and go that route and use my military experience, which gave me a leg up. So I think it was maybe 3,000 to 5,000 applicants that applied for the apprenticeship the year I was getting out, and I was number 3.
Okay.
And so I earned a spot. There were only 10 spots.
Wait, so there were 3,000 applications.
Exactly.
10 spots.
10 spots.
And you were number 3.
And I was number 3.
Man, that must have been quite the application.
It was very competitive. Mm-hmm. It was very, very competitive. So I used my military experience and education to do the 4-year apprenticeship and complete it in 2 years.
Okay.
So it was, again, I would tell anybody, it was like, if you graduate 4-year college in 2 years, and so then that allowed me to then transition to earn more money and mm-hmm. start to take care of my family at an earlier age.
Well, you're hitting on a lot of the big components. You know, one of the
Absolutely.
Governor's big priorities is the 60 by 30 and making sure that people have a post-secondary credential.
Absolutely.
And I think for too long it was like, go to college.
Absolutely.
And college is a great option for a lot of people. It's not the only thing that we need as a society. And, you know, we got to take a quick break, but I'm excited to talk a little bit more
Absolutely.
With you about that.
Absolutely.
When we come back on the other side of this break, again, we're talking to Dan Ringo. From Walker Miller.
Everybody knows Carla.
Yeah, we do. Again, this is Adam Ollier with Dan Ringo from Walker Miller Energy Solutions. We were just talking a little bit about this post-secondary credential.
Absolutely.
And I think when we talk about it, there are two ways that folks talk about it. They're like, everybody doesn't need to go to college. And that's what we say in public.
Mm-hmm.
But to our children, we're like, but you going to college,
right.
you little something.
Right,
you know,
right.
But at
right.
the same time, there's so many jobs that we need people to have these other skills
Absolutely.
That can take just as long or even
Absolutely.
Longer.
Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, Director, you hit on something that's very dear to my heart. So for years, and I'm pretty sure you've heard this and your listening audience have heard this as well, is that, well, college, everybody isn't meant for college.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to me, I would say everybody's not cut out for skilled trades.
Oh,
so again,
man, you couldn't have said that. There's
so
a lot of people
that
can't do anything with their hands.
Absolutely. So it's kind of really flipping that on its head to say, when you look at it, a 4-year apprenticeship or 4 years experience learning a trade. Number one, trades are the fastest way, in my opinion, into entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way in which you own a skill, and it allows, number one, zero college debt, which is one of the major, you know, issues facing our society
Yep.
For the next coming generations. And so I think that when you look at everything that it has to offer, I'm not sure if everyone is cut off of skilled trades rather than saying everybody's meant to go to college. Having both a law degree and also the highest trade certifications. My trade certifications, I would say, in many degrees, were a lot harder to attain.
I bet they were.
Then, because with no disrespect to college, and again, it's if you stick with it and you continue to go to classes, eventually you'll graduate. But with the certifications, there are some license or thing, something that you have to take to prove your competency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with law, you do have the bar exam, but you still can have your Juris Doctor.
Yep.
But with these other trades, so I really do encourage, to your point, is for individuals to look at the high-paying occupations that are available that allow someone to also go into entrepreneurship, because you own a skill set that you can then monetize with very low interest investment upfront.
I think that as you talk about, you know, turning this idea on its head, I think the military does an interesting job of balancing skill and credentialing. So when I was in the legislature, we worked really hard to get some legislation changed so that if you had a license in another state, you were coming off active duty, or your spouse or dependent similarly, that your license would be good here in Michigan. And,
that's wonderful.
You know, it was a big challenge, particularly as, you know, you're like, hey, you've done this job in the military.
Right.
And you come back to the U.S., or you come back to your, you know, your city, and they're like, hey, man, you don't have a license. And you're like, I've been doing this on
absolutely
an aircraft. Or
absolutely.
Like
on a large,
exactly. You know, it's like, I think we have this issue where, you know, you have a sergeant or, you know, E5, E6, mm-hmm. that was responsible for $10 million worth of
absolutely.
Equipment.
Absolutely.
And they come back and they're like, well, I'm not qualified for...
Right.
Wait, you're telling me I'm an entry-level
right.
person? But you get somebody who comes right out of college after a four-year degree who isn't qualified to do anything.
Right.
But
right.
they have that degree, and it's like,
absolutely.
Oh, yeah, they can be
absolutely.
Apply for anything.
Absolutely.
It's a big priority for me to kind of turn that on the head in state government, but I know that's a lot. That's something you've worked a lot of with.
Absolutely. And I think that as a society, we're headed back to where I think some of the large companies, large corporate citizens will really drive that paradigm shift where they're going to look to have their own programs where they're going to pretty much bring people in and train them up. Back in the day, you had GM. You had if you had a certification in management from GM, you may not have a bachelor's degree, but you had that certification in management and you learned certain principles and organizational behavior. You could navigate the corporate world and have a good living. I think we're headed back that way, and I even shared that internally with our team at Walker Miller, is looking at taking advantage of some of the courses that we have available for our team members to really develop their occupational path and really carve out a career path for themselves that may not really include going to a four-year college.
Well, now you're segueing. For those who are unfamiliar with Walker Miller Energy, you know, the people who live under rocks and
right.
don't come out of, you know,
Can
you just tell them a little bit about what you all do and how you got started like that?
So Walker Miller Energy Services has been in, Carla Walker Miller started this 22 years ago. And she started selling...
When she was seven, by
the way. Of course, when she was seven. And when she basically started selling equipment.
Mm-hmm.
That's when she started. She worked for a very large company and she left. And through her journey in entrepreneurship, doing many things, it's evolved into where we are now, where we are very diverse in an energy space, clean
mm-hmm.
energy space. So that's really where we have really grown into four states with... four different large utilities and other companies as well that we have partnerships with. But one of the main things we do, we implement energy efficiency programs for utilities. So we pretty much do a lot of outreach.
So when I call DTE and I'm like, hey, I need my home energy space, you know, whatever.
Absolutely. A consultation, someone comes out, that's actually a Walker Miller employee working in partnership for DTE. So that's actually a Walker Miller employee, a team member that actually comes out
mm-hmm.
and performs that home energy consultation. So again, when you look at, we employ a lot of people who would not have had these opportunities if it had not been for a company like Walker Miller. So our main goal and initiative is to provide these opportunities for people who have been traditionally disenfranchised.
And you're headquartered right in the city of Detroit, over on 2nd?
Absolutely. 2nd and Seward.
It's in my running lane, so I run the kids to daycare when the weather is over 50 degrees.
Okay.
people are like, you're running today? I was like, no, it's 35.
Right.
My wife would kill me if I had the kids in the stroller.
Absolutely.
Honestly, my daughter would kill me. She's like, Daddy, it's so cold. Why are we doing this?
But guys, run.
Yeah, yeah. I literally run down second. Okay. So I got a running stroller, a little double running stroller, and so I had the kids in there bundled up. So I think, you know, sometimes I've gone as low as 45, but anything after that, like, it's too cold and windy. But I'm excited about getting back to it. But I run right past the building.
Okay.
That's why
it's
so prevalent in my mind.
So please keep running past, because the developments that Carla and the senior leadership team have for that corner will be a model for really for the world as far as clean energy space. That building will become a net zero building where it will pretty much generate all the energy that it needs. And so it's going to be pretty much a energy hub for that community. So again, it's going to be a beacon of what clean energy will be for the future.
And when you talk about that, I think it's important for people to understand what net zero means for a facility, because I think it'd be only the second or third net zero building in the city.
Absolutely. So, I mean, when you look at one of the main things we do is reducing our energy footprint, our carbon footprint. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the measures and things that we send out to educate individuals on how to reduce their energy usage is to have a building that pretty much is whatever we generate, whatever we consume is going to match. And so it's really to drive and educate people who traditionally are not included in these conversations is to bring them into the conversation, to bring them into the space. We were at an event, I think it was the auto show, and we had about four or five young men come up, and I think they were from around the Detroit and Highland Park area, and they came up and said they would never buy an electric vehicle. And they had no reason other than they were not educated or familiar with fast they are.
I'm on the waiting list for the Lightning, the Silverado.
Exactly. So again, it's not even the consumer aspect of school and building the infrastructure to house all these things, but it's also the careers.
Yep.
And it's also the entrepreneurs to say, hey, listen, you have a business in weatherization, you have a business in trades. How about pivoting your business to come and look at energy and all the opportunities that are there for people that traditionally are not included in that space?
And so Carla, for people who don't know, Carla's a black woman who runs a business in the energy efficiency
space. And she's one of the founding members of Blacks and Electrical Vehicle Infrastructure called BEVI.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's creating something. So when people say, where are the black people in electrical vehicle infrastructure? Well, you have an organization called Blacks in Electrical Vehicle Infrastructure. So again, it's how do you pivot and utilize the skills that you have and the resources that you have to create room for more people.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back. We're here talking to Dan Ringo, who is a senior vice president over at Walker Miller Energy and an Air Force veteran.
Welcome to the Veterans Perspective, presented by the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency, with your host, Director of the MVAA, Adam Ollier.
Again, this is Adam Ollier. We're here with Dan Ringo from Walker Miller Energy. And we've talked a little bit about what Walker Miller Energy does, but can we get back to what it means for you as an Air Force veteran to be able to do this kind of work and how your time in the military brought you to this space and to be qualified in these ways?
Absolutely. So when I had several different positions from skilled trades to entry-level management to middle-level management to senior and executive-level management, I was always asked, how did you transition and pivot and navigate those spaces? And I always take it back to my time in the military. And you look at the phases of, regardless of whatever branch, it's basically the phases are the same. There's a number one, a decision to join the military. So there's a preparation mentally. And then there's basic training.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the purpose of basic training? Basic training is to prepare you for the role that you're going to take.
Is that the purpose of basic training?
I thought
it was to give you a very short haircut, give you not very much sleep, and teach you how to walk in a line.
That's
what I learned in basic training.
Well, that's part of it, but you also learned military protocol.
I did learn military protocol.
You learned military protocol.
But I'm an officer now, so I've forgotten all of those things. You know?
Okay.
Salute
okay.
to me. I salute back.
Absolutely.
How to march, though? Nah. Stand in formation? Nah. Drill in circumstance.
Right.
I don't know if I still remember
those things. Right.
But, you know, I stand in the back of formation. Hey, sir. Yeah, Roger. Roger.
Absolutely.
Sergeant Major's on there like, hey, sir. You know, hey, you were so right, Sergeant Major. Gotcha.
Absolutely.
Gotcha.
So that protocol for basic training, and then was actually tech school, where you actually learned the job that you're going to perform in the military.
And where did you go to? Where was
I went place? To tech school. It was Shepherd Air Force Base.
Where's that?
Wichita, Texas.
Okay.
So, yeah. So that's where I did technical training. So then you're saying, okay, now I've integrated into military life. I'm no longer a civilian. They've gotten my attention. I've entered this new world. Now I'm learning the skill with the foundation of the military bearing and background, and now I'll go to my permanent party. So when you look at the different phases, now it's time to execute.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at changing your life or looking at accomplishing a goal, you look at the phases. Number one, what goal are you deciding? What is your what?
Mm-hmm.
What's your how? Your when? When do you make the decisions? And really, all of those were really taught to me in the military process. So that's really was my foundation for success. So when I look at pivoting now to different decisions, I always look at, okay, what do I need to make a decision? When do I make the decision? What skills will I need along this journey?
Mm-hmm.
How do I prepare? What am I learning? How am I evaluating? How well am I doing? And then where do I need to transition to the next step? When do I need to execute? And once I execute, how do I avoid distractions, which is the temporary duty. We call it TDY in the Air Force.
Yeah, same.
So now those can be distractions where you glee from your path to go and do something else. Do you come back or do you go off to a new path? So those are things that I kind of put in a book form to chronicle my journey from airman to CEO when I had my own company called Ringo Services. But it was going from an E1 to CEO. And how do you navigate those different experiences?
It's probably not a super common experience to go from a... In the Army, we call him a fuzzy, right? Like, he ain't got no rank.
Slick sleeve. We call him a slick sleeve.
Because, you know, it's, you know, when you have your Velcro
right, rank, absolutely.
Like, you don't have that little right. chevron. You just have you're just a little fuzzy.
Absolutely.
So people be like, oh, he's such a little, like, I remember that
yeah.
trend, you know, you had a little fuzzies. But so to go from
right.
that moment where you are literally the bottom of the totem
the
pole
bottom.
To,
absolutely.
You know, writing checks.
Absolutely.
And as people say, you know, you're signing the front side of checks.
Absolutely.
Not the back side.
Absolutely. And that comes with a lot of stress. So that's the one thing people don't understand to it. Sounds cool, but the stress that comes along with that is a whole nother component that you need to be prepared for and remain extremely grounded. And again, that goes back to my military experience. I had some wonderful and amazing leaders that really gave me, outside of my father, a glimpse into what really strong, compassionate leadership looks like,
mm-hmm.
and how you can be the guy that's in charge. You can be the commander, but you can also care about your people,
yep.
and you can lead in a way in which you get the best out of them by being out front and being available, so they know that you're there and they know that you care first,
mm-hmm.
before they know anything else.
Yeah, I mean, if you aren't caring about your soldiers and your team, they know it and they get it.
Absolutely.
And I think as you talked about that, that's one of the challenges that I think a lot of folks struggle with as they come out of the military, going from a situation where you are a real, you know, you are a part of a team, and you come back in the civilian life and you're trying to find that, and it's like you have a bunch of people who punch a clock or
right.
or do whatever. How have you been able to manage that? How do you, as a senior leader, do that? Because I know you talk about, you know, trying to hire other service members.
Right. Well, also build it. So again, it's like one of those things where if it's not there, then you create it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you create it? If you don't have a team, if you're not walking into a team, then create the team. Create that culture and that atmosphere that you know people seek out and really thrive in.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in a position to be, quote unquote, in charge, then you're ultimately, one of our core values at Walker Miller is inclusive stewardship. How are you being a steward of others and resources? How are you taking care? So again, I go back a lot to Carla because I'm beyond working with her. I'm just a big fan of her as a person, is taking care of the people. That's one of the main things she said to me when she hired me. She says, I just want somebody to take care of my people.
Yep.
So as a leader, and again, as a leader when I was in the military, even if you're at the dorms, do you create an environment where people feel comfortable to come hang out
mm-hmm.
and unwind? Is it, we have another term, psychologically safe. Is this a space that's psychologically safe so people can truly be themselves, almost like a Wu-Tang Clan, to use a hip-hop reference, where everybody can be different, but you can all be together.
Yeah, and you're always in the Wu-Tang Clan. You're never not in the Wu-Tang Clan, right?
You know what I'm saying? So that's extremely important. So when you start talking about our diversity, equity, inclusion efforts, how diverse is the team? You know, how included are people, and how equitable do they feel in a situation, but able to bring their authentic self, their best mm-hmm. self, to a situation? And feel a part of a team, but it's okay to be part of the collective, but still retain some individuality to it. Yeah. And that's what I really got from the Air Force.
That's cool. And so what rank did you leave the Air Force as?
I did 3 years, 8 months. I got an early out to participate in their apprenticeship, mm-hmm. but I was an E4 when I left.
Okay.
So I came in as an E1, left as an E4.
So you're pretty lazy, huh? Could have done better, I mean, huh?
So with the Air Force, so director, so the Air Force is a little different.
I'm
you know?
Teasing.
I always tell people, like, you guys score a little higher on the ass, we have to get an Air Force. So
yeah,
so they don't pass out rank like some of the other branches, where it's like, you know, within 2 or 3 months, 6 months, you know.
Yeah, you know, I had a friend, her wife made E7 and 7. Yeah, I mean, her wife was a beast, but you know, as we talk about these things, I think that the military is a starting space for a lot of folks.
Absolutely.
You know, and it
Absolutely.
Sounds like for you, it was an opportunity to hit a hard reset on life.
That's exactly
and
what it was.
Gave you a stable foundation Excellent. To move forward into. And I'm really excited to be able to hear from you about the successes that you've been able to get to.
Absolutely.
You know, we've got another break, but I'd also really like to talk through, you know, whether you've been able to take advantage of the benefits that you're entitled to as
Absolutely.
A veteran.
Let's get
into that. You know, in my job, I'm always like, hey, please take advantage of your benefits. You know, right? Like, and so I've talked about this a number of times, but my first couple days in the office, I met a World War II veteran, 104 years old, 2 Bronze Stars, you know, served in the Pacific, and he applied for veteran benefits when he was 100. 100, when he was 100. It's like, bro, there were a lot of things that you earned.
Right.
Right? Like, is, you know, people are getting ready for tax times, and always funny for me because people who get a refund, they filing those returns right now. They're like, as soon as they got their W-2, they're like, that's my money. Give
absolutely.
Me my money.
Absolutely.
But, like, all the stuff you went through
right.
in the military,
right.
and you are leaving your benefits
absolutely.
On the table.
Absolutely.
And so, after this next break, I'd love to talk to you about how you have been able to engage with taking advantage of the benefits that you earned, that you are entitled to, and as you continue to mentor other folks who have come behind you
Absolutely.
On how you've been able to do that, because, especially with black folks, and you know, everybody can't see Dan, but Dan is also a black man.
Right.
We continue to talk about the challenges that people have in taking advantage of the benefits that you have earned.
Absolutely.
And so we're going to take a quick break, but we'll come right back to that. So this is Adam Ollier here with Dan Ringo from Walker Miller Energy. And just talk to us about your journey getting the benefits that you earned.
So number one, the VA home loan was number one. That was probably one of the first benefits. Well, let me step back. Tuition assistance.
Mm-hmm.
Tuition assistance is really what was the impetus for me to go back to school, because I barely graduated high school. So again, which led to me not doing much out of high school.
Yeah.
But once I got in and I started to have some level of academic success with some of the programs, and realizing that they're going to pay for this, it's 100% now. Then it was 75%. So you still had to pay out of pocket,
yeah.
but it was still 75%. Paying for my college and getting an associate's degree of applied science and mechanical electrical technology. That was like the first, like, oh, wow, this military thing is okay. And then once I got out, that honorable discharge and the points that I got for different employment, federal, state, yep. and city, that was another benefit. But just fast forwarding, VA home loan, I was able to buy a nice home in Rosedale Park at the time with no money down because of the VA home loan.
Well, I hope you still got it because it's probably worth something.
Well, you know what? This is a long time ago, so it was worth something. And then in 2007, it wasn't worth anything.
Oh, I know that.
So, yeah, so I didn't keep it. So I didn't keep it. But then as I went back to school on the GI Bill. Mm-hmm. I got a letter saying, hey, your GI Bill is getting ready to run out in 2 years. I got that letter in 2005. And I went back and finished my bachelor's degree on the GI Bill.
Yep.
And then applied for law school. So none of that would have happened.
Yep.
Had I not used my military benefits. And because I had a couple surgeries with my left hand, I developed a cyst and there was some surgery. I'm listed as a disabled vet mm-hmm. at 0%. So when I did start a business, I was able to get it certified as a service-disabled veteran-owned small business, which allows you to play in a federal space where there are a lot of set-aside contracts and a lot of people doing rather well in that space. So it's a lot of different things. And I have a good friend, Rashawn Bings of Cleveland, Ohio, that I served with. And we say all the time that we definitely got more out that I feel we put in. We both served.
Well, that means he was working it because most people don't, you know, and that's why we, right. you know, with the advent of the PACT Act, you know, I'm out talking to folks and saying, hey, did you know
Absolutely.
That if you have hypertension or diabetes or high blood pressure and you served during the Vietnam era, that it is a presumption that you got that as a result of yeah. your service? How many black folks do you know?
Absolutely.
Served during Vietnam.
Absolutely.
That don't have diabetes, hypertension, Absolutely. Or high blood pressure.
Absolutely.
It's like, hey guys, go to the VA. You're going to get free coverage, Absolutely. Right? And the same thing is true about so many other communities. But as we talk about, you know, the history of black folks, particularly, you know, as we're mm-hmm. in Black History Month, like
right.
the military
right.
did interesting things to black service members. Right. But it was also one of the few places where we have real opportunities, right?
Like, right.
the military has all of its challenges, but it's the closest thing to a meritocracy I've ever been a part of.
Absolutely.
Either you can do the job or you can't, and there is a review on a regular basis,
right.
and we stand next to each other and either I did it or I didn't.
Absolutely.
And in very few other places in the world is that the case. And so I think that's why for so many people like ourselves where, you know, our parents weren't wealthy, you go to the military and you got a shot.
You got a shot.
Can you show up? Can you do it?
Absolutely. I mean, as you were talking, Director, made me think of that what do you want to call it, obstacle course that we did in basic training.
Mm-hmm.
So every man, woman, as you run up, can you get over this on your own? And you have to show and prove and again and move on to the next phase. And at various levels.
You guys do obstacle courses in the Air Force?
Yes, yes.
Do they involve chairs?
No, they don't involve chairs. They involve a lot of running.
Are you sure?
A lot of
running. Air Force.
The Air Force.
I don't know if this is the same branch.
That's the Air Force. But we did have, compared to the other branches, we did have luxury accommodations.
Yeah, you all have. You live in the lap of luxury. I just came back from Air Assault School.
Okay.
And we had a couple Air Force people in the class. And we were joking about the difference in the type of food that we are served.
Absolutely.
And they were like, it's not as good. But, I mean, you know, they were excited about the opportunity to come do...
To slum. The slum.
Yeah. But it was like an adventure for them.
Right.
And we're like, ah.
Yeah, roughing it.
roughing it. And I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah, but no, I mean, and I encourage individuals, and I especially when I go to the high schools, I love to promote the Air Force
mm-hmm.
over the other branches. Number one, that's where I served, and I feel as if it really provided a lot of clear transitional careers post-military than maybe most other branches. And so and then talking to individuals who have served about using those benefits, Walker Miller Energy Services, we look for individuals who are veterans and disabled veterans. And again, because it speaks to our commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Well, are y'all hiring?
We are hiring. We are always hiring. I would recommend your listeners to go to wmenergy.com/careers/careers and look at the positions that are available. And number one, have an updated resume, but also highlight their military experience.
And what's that website again?
wmenergy.com, I would say, /careers.
Okay. So if you're looking for a job and you're a service member, you're a veteran, Walker Miller Energy is looking for you. You should go check in with them.
Absolutely.
They are a great company growing. I know that people have lots of opportunities to grow and expand in your business.
Absolutely.
And so I'm just excited to hear about that. It's Black History Month. Is there something that you'd like to share? I know everybody's got a particular story that they always feel like is missed during this time of year. I always want to give folks the opportunity to tell a story if you got one.
You know, as a patriot, I mean, and for someone like such as yourself that still serves, I would just like for all listeners, especially your Black listeners, to know that, you know, every war that was fought in defense of the liberties that we enjoy, Black people have participated.
Mm-hmm.
From its inception. There's not a war that has occurred on behalf of the United States of America that Black people have not contributed. So I don't really buy into them when people say the Black boys in the hood, famous Black men, ain't got no place in the Army. Mm-hmm. To everything that you said, if it wasn't for armed services, my father and myself, I would not enjoy the life that I'm living today.
100%.
So I hopefully like the whole thing of where you don't belong or what's not for you is to really kind of put that to bed, to understand that we have a place in every place in society.
Yeah.
Because we've outside of servitude and bondage that's constantly put to the society and to the media, but also the honorable service in wartime that Black men and women have contributed to this country.
100%. I mean, I think most kids learn that the first casualty in the Revolutionary
Christmas
War was
Addicts.
Chris
Addicts. Absolutely.
The Black man, you know, when we talk about, you know, the beginning of the Civil Rights era, it was so much of, you know, Black American GIs coming back.
Absolutely.
From World War I and then World War II, who were like, hey, I was not treated this way in Europe.
Exactly.
It was okay for me to fight fights. You know, my dad's elementary school teacher was a Tuskegee Airman. You know, Colonel Jefferson just passed a couple years ago. And it's like, was shot down as a pilot. Those are people who made a difference in this world.
Absolutely.
And so I'm really grateful that you came as someone who continues to make a difference.
Absolutely.
In this world, providing opportunities for people all across the state, particularly as we talk about service members and their families, as we talk about transitioning to a cleaner, greener, more environmentally sustainable country, nation, community. It's cool that you guys are in the vanguard and you're looking for service members to continue to do that work.
Absolutely.
And so I'm excited that you came on and let us hear a little bit about your story as we continue to tell these stories across the state and highlight veterans who are doing amazing things and ways that you can participate with you. So thank you so much for coming on.
It's been an absolute pleasure to be here, sir.
Cool. Well, again, that was Dan Ringo, Vice President of Operations at Walker Miller Energy Services. And this is Adam Ollier, the Director of the Michigan Veteran Affairs Agency. Glad to have you.